Okay, so our first speaker is Aman, and he's going to talk to us about illuminating the Perrine instability supernova mass gap with superkilonova. So, Aman, the floor is yours.
Hello, can you hear me? Is it coming? Okay, awesome. Hello, everyone. My name is Aman Agarwal, and I am a PhD student here at the Perimeter Institute and the University of Guelph under the supervision of Dr. Daniel Siegel. And today I'm going to talk about eliminating the Perrine instability supernova mass gap with superkilonovae. In this talk, I will try to present a novel way of producing black holes in a mass range where they were theoretically thought to be absent. On top of that, when we fill this mass gap with these black holes, there are signatures of this event which can be observed by upcoming telescopes and gravitational wave observatories that I'll discuss about also. So here's an overview of my talk. I'll start with this mass range that I talked about, the Perrine instability supernova mass range, and also the event that we are proposing, which can be used to fill this mass range with black holes. So what is this mass gap? From stellar evolution, we know that at the end of a star's lifetime, its nuclear fuel runs out and it starts to collapse. For massive stars, 8 to 10 solar masses, they'll collapse into a black hole. They can form a neutron star, but they'll collapse ultimately into a black hole. For masses around 55 to 130 solar masses, when it is collapsing in the core, it will start to explosively ignite oxygen. And this explosive ignition can cause the outer layers of the star to shed away in a pulse that is shown over here. And when this pulse ejection happens, the mass of the star decreases, it cools down for a bit, goes again in the same cycle where it starts to collapse again, explosively ignites oxygen, and does this pulse ejection and so on and so forth till it goes below this 55 solar mass range and or limit, and then it can not ignite oxygen explosively. The mass is just not enough, and so it will directly collapse into a black hole. Sometimes the explosive power is so huge that it can totally disrupt the star into in a supernova. And when it is above 130 or 140 solar masses, what will happen is this oxygen will start to photodisintegrate. So the fuel for this explosive ignition will start to run out. And so it will again form a black hole. So below 55 or 50 solar mass, it can form a black hole. Above 130 solar mass, it can form a black hole. But in that range, black holes are not formed. And that is why stellar evolution theory predicts that there should be a mass gap in the black hole mass distribution. And this mass gap is called the Perrine instability supernova mass gap. So that was the theory. But in observations, LIGO and Virgo have observed more than 7 black holes in this very mass range. As you can see over here, this is the 55 to 130 solar mass range. And there are around 7 primary black holes for LIGO and Virgo in this mass range. So the question is, how did these black holes form? There are many ways that have been proposed in the literature. We propose collapsars as a way to fill this mass gap. So what are collapsars? Collapsars are massive stars around 20 to 30 solar mass, which are collapsing but have a lot of rotation. They are rapidly rotating. Due to this rotation, what will happen is you'll form a seed black hole, but most of the material has a lot of angular momentum. So it will not fall directly into the black hole. It will form an accretion disk around the black hole. And that is the collapsar scenario. It is a widely accepted model as a progenitor of long gamma ray bursts. And it was first introduced in 1999 by McFadyen and Woosley to explain long gamma ray bursts. But this is 20 solar mass. This is nowhere near the mass range that I was talking about, which is 55 to 130 solar mass. So what we propose is we'll take up a super beefed up version of this collapsar, which is the super collapsar, which is around 130 to 150 solar mass at the time of collapse. So while it is collapsing, it will form a seed black hole, but most of the material will go into the accretion disk around the black hole. And these accretion disks, these are so heavy, so turbulent, and there's so many turbulent processes happening in these disks that they can eject material. While the material is getting accreted to the black hole, some portion of the material will be ejected out to infinity. And in our simulations, we find it could be around 50 solar mass. So we started with 130 to 150 solar mass. If we eject even 30 solar mass, we finally end up into this mass range that I was talking about. And when the black hole has finished accreting the rest of the material that was not ejected, we will form a black hole in the mass range. And this is the way we are proposing that we can fill the mass range with super collapsed stars. Not only that, these events, this ejection which will happen from this black hole accretion disk, can lead to nucleosynthesis of heavy elements, the origin of which is still a mystery in astrophysics. And these heavy elements have characteristic signatures called kilonovae, but these super collapsars, due to their mass, they would not only have signatures in the electromagnetic spectrum, but in the gravitational wave spectrum also, and that would lead to some multi-messenger signals, which I'll discuss about later. So before discussing about the ways to observe this event, I'll go a bit into the methods or the models that we are using. So to collapse a star, you need a star. And the stellar model that we are using is from this work by Renzo et al. 2020, who do stellar evolution. And at the time of collapse, they have a very massive and compact star, around 130 to 150 solar mass. That is what we need. But all this mass, this is around a solar radius. So all that mass is concentrated within one solar radius. It's heavily compact. But one of the biggest uncertainties with this model is the angular momentum. With these heavy models, there's no knowing what is the angular momentum profile in the star, how is the angular momentum transported from the inner to the outer, and vice versa. There's a lot of uncertainty. So what we do to overcome that is we prescribe a parametric angular momentum profile to our star. We discretize our star in the radial and polar directions, and then we give it a parametric angular momentum profile shown in black over here. So how do we parameterize this profile? First thing to know is that the green profile is the Keplerian angular momentum profile, which you can assume is sort of the maximum rotation that layer can have before getting disrupted from the star. Then what we do is we divide our star into a core and envelope region, and we assume that due to physical processes during stellar evolution, angular momentum was transported from the core to the envelope. And so the core will have less angular momentum and the envelope will have more angular momentum. Then our profile, our prescribed profile, follows a fraction of the Keplerian angular momentum to a certain radius, which we call the transition radius. And then it follows a power law. So the two parameters that we can vary is this transition radius and then the fraction of the Keplerian angular momentum that we prescribe in the envelope. And when we vary these two parameters, we can have a host of profiles which will span a much larger area in the angular momentum profile. And thus we can make conclusions about the mass of the black hole in the end and various system parameters, irrespective of whatever angular momentum transport happened in the stellar evolution by varying these angular momentum profiles. So just to give you an illustration of what happens when the material gets accreted onto the disk, as you can see, the material starts swirling around the black hole and gets accreted, but also in these regions, which we call the corona, the material is thermally and due to alpha recombination and many other processes, it's ejected and it's ejected away to infinity. And that is where I'm saying that around 10 to 50 solar mass of the material can be ejected from the system. So this is one of our simulation results, where we evolved the masses of the black hole, the disk, and the wind. Here, the two parameters of the angular momentum profile have been fixed. And you can see the mass of the black hole that we form lies comfortably in the mass gap for this one simulation. Now, in this simulation, we fixed the two parameters. But the reason for giving the parametric profile was to be able to vary it and explore a large number of, or the whole parameter space. And that is what I do over here. I vary the fraction of the maximum rotation and the transition radius. And then I find out, I do multiple simulations, and I find out what is the final black hole mass after the simulation ends. And you can see in this contour plot, the final black hole mass varies from 55 to 135 solar mass. And in most of the angular momentum parameter space, I'll form black holes in the parent stability supernova mass gap. Here for reference, I've also shown contours from the gravitational wave event, the first gravitational wave event that LIGO-Virgo observed in this mass range, GW190521. And you can see it lies in a really nice area of the angular momentum parameter space. Then in my last section, I would like to focus on the signatures of this event. This event has a lot of signatures, and we propose that they can be observed by the upcoming telescopes, which would be like a direct confirmation of our hypothesis that these super collapsars can fill the parent stability supernova mass gap. So before I go into the different signals, a bit of preamble on the heavy elements. The origin of heavy elements in the periodic table, these elements and the lanthanides and actinides, the origin, the astrophysical origin of these elements is still a mystery. And the major theories are either merging neutron stars, which is like a question mark in this, this is a very nice illustration, and then like dying low mass stars or massive stars. So these are the two major competing, I would say, birthplaces for heavy elements or the R process elements. The first is the neutron star mergers. This was actually observed in 2017 in GW170817 by LIGO and Virgo. And then an electromagnetic transient was also observed, which is called kilonova, which is a signature of the birth of heavy R process elements. But this model has some shortfalls. Neutron star mergers have difficulty explaining R process enrichment in dwarf galaxies and all across the chemical evolution of a galaxy. So the collapsar model was proposed in 2019 by Siegel, Barnes, and Metzger to overcome some of these shortcomings. And they were proposed as a major source of R process material. Our model is a beefed up version of the collapsars. So naturally, we expect our super collapsars would also produce R process elements, and they do. Not only do they produce R process elements, they produce tons of R process material, 10 to 20 solar masses, which is huge, because in a normal neutron star merger or a normal collapsar, you expect at maximum 0.1 to 1 solar mass of R process material. But there's a caveat. These super collapsar events would also be 10 times rarer. So even though they'll be producing 10 times more material, they would be 10 times more rarer, and they would essentially have similar contributions as the neutron star mergers and collapsars. Here again, I've shown these contour plots where if I vary the parameters of my angular momentum profile, the fraction of maximum rotation and the transition radius, I can produce a lot of R process material in most of my contour in most of my parameter space. So this heavy amount of R process material that we are ejecting, they can undergo radioactive decay. In a neutron star merger and collapsar scenario, we expect to see a kilonova from this radioactive decay, which is an optical transient. But since we are producing so much more material in this event, we'll have an electromagnetic transient which would be much more luminous. And that is why we call it a super kilonova. And in our simulations, we find that this transient peaks in the near and mid-infrared wavelength with some broad features, which is very perfect for the upcoming Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope. And fitting in the Roman telescope pipeline, we find that we may be able to detect 1 to 20 of these superkilonovae in the 5 years that Roman Space Telescope would be functional. On top of that, the disks that are formed around the black hole when the black hole is accreting would be so heavy that they would be gravitationally unstable. And we all know gravitational instability, we can expect gravitational radiation. And we do see in our simulations gravitational radiation come out with a very characteristic distinguishing feature from the chirping signal that LIGO-Virgo observes. Instead of the chirp, we have sort of a sad trombone feature in our frequency evolution, which would be different from binary mergers, and thus will distinguish superkilonovae events from binary merger events. Not only that, these signals, since they would be decreasing in frequency with time, they'll start in the frequency of one detector, but would end up in the frequency range of another detector. So it can be followed by multiple detectors, and it would be a multi-band signal. And the accretion and the processes happening in this super collapsa event, the time scales are very commensurate with the long gamma ray burst. So we also predict that a subclass of long gamma ray burst could actually originate from this super collapsa event or massive collapsa event. Thank you. So I've my summary slide here. So as I promised, I wanted to tell you guys about a new method with which we propose to fill the pensability supernova mass gap. And this event can lead to signals from electromagnetic to gravitational wave radiation, gamma rays, optical, infrared, and gravitational wave. So in spirit, it would be a truly multi-messenger signal. And I cannot wait for the day that this event lights up in our telescopes. Thank you.
You mentioned that you can extract the gravitational wave signal from the disks that you produce in this event. How will you extract this? Because as I understand, you don't have numerical relativity simulations.
Yeah, so this is, I didn't go over that, but this is a Newtonian simulation. And I extract that from assuming a quadrupole moment of two mass orbiting around each other. But in this case, what happens is the gravitational instability leads to a clump in the disk. So you have the central black hole and the clump. But this clump, rather than merging to the black hole or going towards the black hole, is going away from the black hole. And that is why you have that sad trombone feature instead of the chirping feature, which is sort of like a mirror of the chirp, because this clump is going away. And then you can assume a mass quadrupole moment, calculate the strain, and that is how I extract the gravitational wave signal.
There are any that's coming in.